Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Quality Power Electrical Equipment Limited Q3 FY26 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Siddharth Bhamre, Head of Research, Asit C. Mehta. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. On behalf of Asit C. Mehta, Pantomath Group Company, I welcome you all to this con call where Quality Power Management will apprise us on a fantastic set of numbers Q3 FY26. And for this, today on call, we have Mr. Buranidhan Pandyan, Joint Managing Director, who's joining this call from Chicago, U.S. What a time to be in the U.S., I would say. Also, Mr. Rajesh Jeyaraman, Chief Financial Officer. Mr. Sanjog Mhatre, Chief Business Officer, who's now been elevated to Chief Executive Officer. Our greetings for that to you, Sanjog. And Mrs. Sarika Jadhav, Senior VP Finance. Over to you, Bunny.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us this morning for our Q3 and nine-month and financial year 2026 earnings call. The quarter gone by has been an important one for the company. We delivered a healthy operating performance, broadly in line with the direction we had communicated to the market earlier. Execution improved meaningfully across organizations, driven by better advanced planning of critical materials, tighter project governance, and disciplined cost management on the ground. Our teams remain sharply focused on delivery timelines and margin protection, and I am pleased to note that this focus has helped us sustain profitability despite a dynamic and often unpredictable operating environment. During the quarter, we successfully executed multiple large-value orders through our Turkish operation. As this also coincided with the financial year-end, the timing led to a noticeable uplift in quarterly revenues. As a promoter and long-term steward of the company, it is critical for me that we walk the talk. I am therefore particularly satisfied that the guidance provided, both on the top line and the bottom line, has been largely met for the year. The standout achievement has been Mehru's performance with an EBITDA margin of 16.4%, fully aligned with the commitments we had made to our stakeholders earlier this year. On the strategic front, we took an important step by completing the acquisition of a 50% stake in Sukrot Electric Company Private Limited, converting it into a joint venture of the company along with Yash High Voltage Limited. Sukrot operates in electrical component manufacturing and brings in highly complementary capabilities to our ecosystem. When combined with our instrument transformer and our upcoming magnet wire capacities, Sukrot enhances our access to the transformer manufacturing value chain across geographies. Equally important to note that we have welcomed a dynamic leadership team at Sukrot, and we are encouraged by the early signs. Following the financial handover, the company turned operationally positive in its very first month under the new management, something that has not been achieved over the past 5 years. This gives us confidence in both the business model and the leadership driving it forward. On the capacity expansion side, we are making steady and tangible progress. The Sanghi Global Coil Factory construction timeline has been advanced in line with our earlier communication, and we are now targeting completion by June 2026, ahead of our earlier schedule. Operational commissioning, of course, remains subject to regulatory approvals, including the critical environmental clearance certification, which we continue to actively engage upon. In parallel, the board also has approved an additional investment for setting up a global engineering and technology center at Sanghi. This facility will serve as a group-wide hub for design, engineering, and product development, an investment that reflects our belief that sustainable growth in our industry must be anchored in deep engineering capability. Expansion at Mehru is also progressing well, with equipment being commissioned in a phased manner. The Cochin expansion is fully complete, and we are evaluating the establishment of an instrument transformer manufacturing facility in Turkey through our group entities aimed at serving the European markets with greater proximity and responsiveness. With the induction of new leadership across the group, it also afforded me something rare and valuable: time to step back and learn. Earlier last month, I spent time at the Flame University as a part of the Next Orbit program. Going back to the classroom was both humbling and energizing. The program helped me look at the organization from a wider lens, beyond numbers and quarterly outcomes, to reflect on what it truly means to run at scale, a public, global, and an institution-driven enterprise. Interactions with diverse cohort and a strong faculty sharpened my thought process around capital allocation, governance frameworks, sustainability, leadership depth, and investor communication. These learnings have directly influenced how we are shaping the next budget, not merely as a financial exercise, but as a strategic roadmap for long-term value creation. I would like to sincerely thank our employees for their commitment, our customers for their trust, and most importantly, our long-term investors for their continued confidence in us. I now invite our new Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Sanjog Mathre, to share the business updates. Thank you. Jai Hind.
Thank you, Mr. Pandian. Good morning to all, and thank you for joining us today. The strong results this quarter are a direct outcome of the commitment and execution strength of our teams. Despite more than 25 holidays during this quarter, our operations performed exceptionally well, which reflects the resilience and focus of our workforce. We have continued to strengthen our manpower, particularly in areas aligned with expansion and new growth initiatives. Headcount additions are ongoing, with new employees joining regularly. This increased capacity enhances operational stability, reliability, and supports a strong one-time culture anchored in well-defined processes. I am also happy to share that our Cochin expansion is now fully operational, strengthening the ability to serve coil-based products for the domestic markets more efficiently. Looking ahead, we have set higher targets for order intake for the coming years. Budgeting activities are underway, both internally and in close coordination with our group companies. Demand has been particularly robust from the Middle East, Europe, United States, and Australia, reflecting both the strength of our product portfolio and our growing global footprint. Despite delivering record high execution levels during this period, our order book has expanded meaningfully. We are currently in advanced discussions for potential orders exceeding rupees 300 crores, which we expect to close before the end of the financial year. From a market perspective, we continue to navigate global challenges, including volatility in metal prices and supply chain constraints, while copper prices have been soaring up. Our exposure remains limited and does not materially impact Quality Power at this stage. Aluminium prices are expected to be a little impactful. However, we are progressively adjusting our prices to manage this anticipated increase. As part of the upcoming promising journey, our first GIS trial product is targeted for market readiness by June or July of 2026, making an important milestone in our portfolio expansion. Positive indicator is that the increase in customer audits at our facilities, particularly for HVDC and SATCOM projects, the growing frequency of these audits reflects increasing confidence from global customers and ensures that our operations remain system-driven, compliant, and process-oriented. To summarize, therefore, we are entering the next phase with stronger teams, clearer processes, higher targets, and a disciplined one-team approach, positioning Quality Power Group quite well to manage current challenges and support sustainable growth going forward. Thank you for your time and continued trust. I now hand over the call to our CFO, Mr. Rajesh Jayaraman, who will walk you through the financial highlights for this period. Thank you.
Thank you, Bharani. Thank you, Sanjog. Good morning, everyone. I will briefly summarize the financial performance for the quarter ended 31st December 2025, covering both our standalone and consolidated results based on total income. Overall, the quarter reflects healthy growth in income and profitability, driven by better execution, operating leverage, and disciplined cost management. Starting with the standalone business, total income for the quarter stood at rupees 592 million, registering a quarter-on-quarter growth of about 9% and year-on-year growth of around 63%. The growth was primarily driven by higher execution and billing during the quarter, while other income remained stable, indicating that growth was largely operational. EBITDA increased to around rupees 204 million, reflecting a substantial growth over the previous quarter and a strong improvement, almost doubled over last year. EBITDA margin improved to about 35%, supported by better absorption of fixed costs and controlled operating expenses. Profit before tax stood at rupees 194 million, growing by about 12% sequentially and almost doubling on a year-on-year basis. Profit after tax was rupees 146 million, reflecting a similar improvement supported by strong operating performance and a stable tax structure. Moving on to consolidated results, total income for the quarter stood at rupees 2,843 million, representing a quarter-on-quarter growth of about 30% and more than 250% increase compared to the same quarter last year, aided by scale-up in consolidated operations, robust order execution, improved capacity utilization, and higher operating scale. Consolidated EBITDA increased to around rupees 793 million, showing a strong sequential improvement, with EBITDA margin improving to about 28%. This was supported by operating leverage and disciplined control of fixed costs. Profit before tax stood at rupees 743 million, growing by over 65% sequentially, and profit after tax increased to rupees 628 million, reflecting a strong improvement driven by higher operating profitability. Consolidation of financial Sukrut Electric Company Private Limited will happen from this quarter, Q4 financial 26 onwards. Looking ahead, we remain confident in the business outlook, supported by healthy order pipeline and improved execution capabilities. As revenues continue to scale, we expect operating leverage to support margin stability with potential for gradual improvement. Our focus will remain on disciplined growth, cost efficiency, and capital prudence to drive consistent value creation for the stakeholders. Thank you. We will now be happy to take your questions.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, please press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question comes from the line of Shaleen Kumar with UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi. Am I audible?
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Congratulations to the management. Very, very strong performance and pretty good set of numbers. So, some of the basic questions which I want to understand, we see margin is improving in Mehru, but just to understand one thing, is the category, in that category, can we see the margin coming to the level of the company, or is that category is something where we should see something like a mid-teen kind of a margin, or there is a scope for margin further improvement?
Good morning, Shalin. We have margin for improvement in Mehru. I believe we should be in hope for a higher teen margin if the commodity prices remain stable. However, Mehru is also the place where we have new capacity coming in, and we have some new geographies that we need to explore. So it's between margin and growth. I believe we will take a chance as long as the overall guidance of 20-22% is being met. We may sacrifice some margin for larger growth because Right now, the focus is to make Meru a global brand. That is what the board is also putting across our new facility, the exploring a new facility in Turkey. So overall, I think if it's just margin, we can push more margin, but we are also pushing growth. That's where it is.
Got it. Got it. Thank you. So, Bharani, then my next question is on your Sangli capacity. So, you know, we have a capacity coming, I believe, by starting around June 2026. So just want to understand, like, what will be our next process? Like, will the new facility require qualification from the customers, or because we already have existing facility, it doesn't need that? When will we start, you know, booking orders on that? So if you can just walk us through what would be your next step, probably, you know, from now till maybe next 6 to 9 months, etc.
So once we have an operational facility, the customer audits would start on the HVDC. There would be at least about 40, 50 different audits. Global customers, depending on the projects, we would schedule those guys coming in. Initially, it would be Power Grid, Adani, Sterlite of the world in India, along with EPC providers of HVDC like Hitachi, Siemens, and GE. So we believe that could be the first quarter focus, including ISO and the NABL laboratories. With that, I think on the order book front, I think at Quality Power, right now we are at about 280+ crores or 290+ crores in order book, and we are expecting another 200-250 crores in the next 3 to 4 weeks. So we are at about 500 crores, which is about three times what we closed last year in revenue. Going forward, we would focus a lot more on execution. And from here till June of year, we think we have another 4 or 5 months more to pick up more orders. I think orders at this moment is not the worry. It is how we are able to execute, get the audits and the approvals faster from the authorities, the bureaucracy, that is, basically.
Got it. Got it. Sure. This question is bound to come, so rather, I ask. So, Bharani, your guidance, I was listening to last time, you know, you were sticking to  20%, but given your performance has been so good, how should we think about for this year, you know, margin now?
I think as we committed last time, we would improve upon the guidance. I think you can take about 22% as a floor and with an upward bias that we would try to achieve. We have some small changes in numbers that may happen because of Meru at copper and aluminum at Quality Power. But I think we're comfortable with an upward bias of over 22%.
Basically 22++, you're saying?
Correct. So assuming there's no more surprises on the copper and aluminum front from today.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. Like, even where the commodity prices are right now. Right. So, yeah, got it. No, that's very, 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 very healthy.
From a company perspective, to give you individual numbers, EBITDA margins at Quality Power, the core product factory, is 34%. At Endox level, it's about 30%, and at Meru level, it's about 16.4%. So that's how that number comes to 22. So, larger margins are being delivered from the core products factory at this moment.
Got it, Chief. Got it. No, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shalin.
Best of luck. I'll join back the queue.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Praveen Motwani with Bank of India Mutual Funds. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, team. Thanks for this opportunity. So firstly, congrats on the great set of numbers across the parameters this time. So just wanted to understand from you that with increasing adoption of, you know, grid-scale battery energy storage system for renewable integration, does that any challenges the requirement of HVDC or FACSAT projects going forward? What's your view on this, sir?
I would like to rephrase this question again, Praveen. So when we put batteries, do we put it at the generation end or at the receiving end, if I may ask, according to you? So we put the batteries closer to where we generate the solar power or the place where we distribute the solar power?
Generation end.
So then how are we going to transmit the power from generation to distribution?
Okay. So according to
you,
Yeah, understood.
So if I'm going to put all the batteries in Khavda, how does Bombay get power? And if I put all the batteries in Bombay, how do the solar panels from Khavda reach Bombay? So having said it, we've already done BESS projects. We are making our own EMS and converters in Turkey. We are about 2 or 3 projects old. We have our converters already on the field. But BESS is a complementary technology to HVDC FACTS. And battery energy storage is at this moment a couple of hours maximum. What we say as a peak load sharing in the peak load times. When you have to really store energy for more than 8 or 10 hours, we still don't have those kind of batteries. And assuming bad weather for a couple of days, there is no other option but to get, conventional power sources. So interconnecting of transmission grids is a no-brainer technologically. And if you look at some of the new projects that are coming up, these are typically 1 gigawatt plus. So even the Reliance new projects, what they are talking is again excess of 30. I think it's close to 40 or 50 gigawatt. So AC transmission line typically is about 1 gigawatt in transmission, whereas the HVDC in India, we are talking 6 gigawatts. So the customer does not intend to put in 50 transmission lines at transmission voltages. They would rather do about 5 lines of HVDC. So I believe HVDC is there to stay. I was here reading about the Power Grid earnings call last week. I believe they have announced 2 more HVDCs coming up in the next year. But apart from the Indian HVDCs, we have executed HVDCs in Korea, in Abu Dhabi. We are also executing something in Australia. So we see global opportunity as much larger than India, even though in India we are the dominant and the only player at this moment.
Got it. That was very helpful, sir. And so just to understand what portion of our order book is, executable in the next 12 to 18 months?
About 95%.
95%. Okay, got it.
95% if everything goes okay. Because we would normally not like an order book of more than 12 to 15 months. I normally pick up orders only once the capacity comes online or we have a visible hold on the capacity. Otherwise, we lose money on LDs or the metal prices give us a very rude shock. So 12, 15 months, I think, has always been our traditionally a safe period for us.
Got it. Thank you so much, sir. That's it for my
answer. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants, please limit your questions to 2 per participant. The next question comes from the line of Aditya Trivedi with Nepean Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. So is the new HVDC CTC magnet wire facility able to service demand for both BSC and LCC technologies, given that different specifications of CTC are required for both?
So for the coil product that is used for both VSC and LCC technology is the same with the same raw material. So I do not think that is a problem. This special HVDC wire is the first time that we'll be making in the country. And I believe over a period of time, we would also cascade or, vertically move into the CTC cable facility for HVDC in the transformer manufacturing space. With Sukrut already giving us in excess of 200 to 300 global customers on transformer business globally, we believe we will at some point also be able to sell it to competition.
Okay, got it. And given the volatility in commodity prices, how much of our existing order book of 895 crores is fixed price versus having price variation clauses?
I don't have the numbers, but I think I can be reasonably sure that 98% is fixed prices. So it's very, very rarely because we do not have any government direct dealings unless it's Power Grid. So our numbers are already fixed at times when the gold prices or silver prices start shooting up. We also understand that copper and silver or copper and aluminium also start shooting up. So we start increasing prices 2 or 3% every week or sometimes every month. But when it suddenly increases by 30% in a night, it's unexpected. That is when we get some shock. But then when we adjust the prices to a higher prices, then the next quarter and the price goes down, we make the money. So overall, we are not worried about the margin expectation. As I said, some of the coil products where we are exposed on aluminium, we are doing 34% EBITDA margin. We have scoped the aluminium price to the sale price is about 20%-25% at this moment. So if anything, it would be about 2%-3% here and there. On Meru, the impact would be about 1%-2% based on what the copper looks like at the current moment. So this is all at the end of, they're not worried. It's all power electronics. Copper doesn't hurt them.
Got it. And one last question from my end is on the OCF to EBITDA conversion. That seems to have got impacted this year. How do you see the cash conversion cycle going forward as you all ramp up on this new capacity?
My apologies, Aditya. I don't understand the question. I'll have to route it to my CFO or VP Finance. Sarika or Mr. Rajesh, can you please answer the question?
Can you please repeat the question? We did not get it clearly.
Yeah. I'm saying the OCF to EBITDA ratio, which was at 0.5 in FY25, has come down to 0.1 for H1 FY26, which means your working capital has got stretched. So how do you see your net working capital days going forward? Do you see that improving?
Sir, our working capital limits, we have optimum utilization during this quarter for the procurement of raw materials like conductors and insulators to support the business operations and requirements. That's why it's stretched during this quarter. And we also. Yes, sir.
Aditya, what we have done is we have had a stockpile of all critical raw materials, including insulators, whichever we felt was very critical to the operational requirements. So these are all in stock, building on inventory. I think that is why you would see a slight enhancement. This is one of the reasons why we didn't disappoint on the numbers, because we stocked up.
Sure. Okay. Makes sense. Thank you.
Once the demand supply in the inventory side or in the supply chain side improves, I think we would reduce our inventory levels.
What are your receivable days right now?
Sarika, you will have to answer that.
Sir, our receivable days are normally 45-60 days.
Okay. Thank you. That's it from my end.
Thank you, sir.
Sure. Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Kartik Kohli with Kotak Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for taking my question. While obviously you've had a very good quarter, I wanted to understand how these expansions that you're doing, what sort of top line do you see these contributing? And what is the overall opportunity size in the market that you intend to capture with these? And the more important part of all of this is more linked to your magnetic wire capacity, because that's entirely for your own value chain. I wanted to understand from what all other areas of backward integration that you may be looking to secure your supply chain. And that's my first question.
So the backward integration is something that we are not very excited about. We are only doing it to ensure that such a large facility is able to run on it in critical times for especially HVDC projects. So I do not foresee any further backward integration unless there is a huge shortage going forward. With regards to the revenue potential, I believe I do not have any published numbers, but my nearest competitor is a company called Trench Electric. This was earlier owned by Siemens, currently owned by a clutch of private equity investors. On their last post in December, their order backlog was about 1.5 billion euros or euros. So I think there is a lot of scope for growth, what we say, in that sphere between the coil and instrument transfer products. So instead of focusing on what is the kind of opportunities or the market that would be in, I think we are more focused on getting the factory to about 70%-75% capacity utilization over the next two or three years. I think that would generate enough cash and beat the estimates. The market is there on HVDC fans and other products, right?
Got it. That's very helpful. My second question is more linked to your GIS product line. Your partnership with the Korean company, I wanted to understand, firstly, what sort of co-development benefit that you get here? Does it help you with qualification with customers? Does it get you market access far more quickly than any other player? And more specifically, is there a limitation to such an arrangement? Like, does it limit you to certain geographies or the certain set of customers? Is there any sort of limitation on that? Yeah, that is my second question.
So when you develop high-end technology, especially at the transmission voltage, say at about 400 kV, 765 kV, there is always a market resistance. The resistance comes from end customers, say, in this case, Power Grid or likes of Power Grid. Then would come the system integrators themselves. So in India, there are four major system integrators. Hyosung, GE, these are the largest, and Hitachi and Siemens. These guys get about 95 to 97% of the current market share, and he also being the market leader in high voltage. So when we started developing this product line, we were the first people in India, but we had to also, there was also support from the central government. The CEA has been very positive on this approach because this was very critical to the national security because all this stuff is coming from China or Europe at this moment, and this was critical to most of the substation then going forward. So the government had a positive view on it, Power Grid had a positive view on it, but we still had to have some partner who would put it at the 765 kV or 400 kV to begin with. Hyosung is a very large company. It has, I think this year the revenue is in excess of $17 billion, I think in the size of Hitachi. And they also have a globally a large facilities for GIS across the world. So working with Hyosung also not only allows us the Indian market going forward, but also the Korean and the American markets, where we see a lot of traction and including Middle East. So it has a natural buy-in. So whatever we sell to Hyosung, we do not have to pay any royalty, but whatever we sell to the other customers, we have a very small royalty, which goes away in about 5 years' time. So that is where it is. I think there's a cost of development. And when we are working with the green gas technology, green gas testing, protocols, there is a lot of knowledge share that is happening with Hyosung handholding, and I believe it will be a successful partnership for some more products. We are also starting work on transient surge capacitors for GIS. We are also working with them to see if Sukrut can develop more components into the GIS ecosystem. As GIS goes in, I believe we have the first mover advantage on the products into it. And we have also been approached by the other players in the market to be able to see whether we can also start delivering to them. So we are working with all the large players now in the ecosystem.
So just to quickly follow up, so you said there is a positive like view of, you know, government agencies, PGCIL, system integrators. So like, are you seeing a positive push in terms of like they're actually asking for more such partnerships in place, you know, for other products and specifically with non-Chinese players, which more specifically would end up being more Korean players at this point?
There are a lot more opportunities in the power system, but we are limiting ourselves to critical high technology items. So we do not intend to participate there, but as we speak, I am in the U.S., and I believe we will have some more partnerships coming from this part of the world. So the non-Chinese critical technology items is a requirement across the world right now, including Middle East, U.S., even parts of Europe now, with all governments being protectionist to their own national security. They require access to technology locally. So that is something that we are working upon. And because given the access of technologies, if you see, we have put across our technologies that we own, we become a credible player in technology transfer along with local partners or co-joint manufacturing. So we are exploring opportunities in that side.
Got it, sir. Thank you. I'll fall back in the queue.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Nimish Sundar with Elara Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, thank you for the opportunity, sir. Congratulations on a very strong set of numbers during the quarter. So my first question is, I just wanted to understand on the recent EU and US trade deals that we have signed, particularly for Meru. So Could we see any additional new opportunities that we could gain from this? Also the Chinese relaxation that was provided, the news of that recently. For Meru, could we see any impact? Because what we heard is that would also be covering transformers. Could we see any new Chinese entrants coming and affecting the pricing?
I will answer the first question with regards to the tariffs. I think we never had a problem with the tariffs because there was no competition in U.S., so everything had to be imported, and most of us were sitting at similar tariff levels. What I have seen in the last two days I am in the U.S. talking to customers, it's not about the tariffs, it's about the sentiment. Like, you know, they prefer somebody with a lower tariff or lower cost than, you know, somebody with a higher tariff. I think the sentiments are positive towards India at this moment. With regards to the next question on China, I think it's a mere speculation. With regards to instrument transformers to Indian utilities, I think the discussion you are referring to is part transformers, not instrument transformers. Instrument transformers, every customer, every utility has a different certification test, different specifications. Even when the Chinese were there in full force before 2020, there was not a single tender which they participated. So I don't think the worry is at the Meru end for the Chinese. On the HVDC side, including pre-2020, the Chinese were not allowed, primarily because the spare part requirement is about 40 years. If and when Chinese would be allowed, they would be allowed in small categories in the AC transmission segment, where we do not have much to contribute anyways at the transmission voltage level. With regards to, again, the component business like Sukrut, again, we are not worried. Endox already faces Chinese competition in that part of the world, and most of the global markets that we operate in, we already face Chinese. It is not something new to us. It is not something that worries us. However, the recent news I would only classify as speculation and nothing more.
Okay, fine. Very clear, sir. Secondly, you mentioned in the speech that some supply chain constraints were being faced. Would you highlight if there is anything significant as of now in any particular area that we're facing, or it's largely something that it's in the normal course of business and we can go through it?
The insulators are still a cause of concern. If you look at something like modern insulators, you see their stock touching upper circuit every day. It just indicates that how big is the shortage in this part of the world. The Chinese insulators are again not available for some of the critical projects in India. Again, for the Indian projects and some projects in the U.S. and Europe, you are stuck to Indian vendors. We do import some insulators now from China, paying a larger price than what our Indian counterparts do. That is something that is very visible. Apart from it, there is ongoing shortage of different commodities. You work on one, the second one would go in for a shortage. This is because of the kind of peak cycle in manufacturing we are seeing across the sector. This is something that I cannot predict right now that tomorrow we will have it. We stockpile it for a couple of months, but not more than a couple of months.
Okay, fine. And just one last bookkeeping question. Could you provide the revenue split between Quality Power, Endox and Meru for the quarter?
Quality Power Electrical Equipments and Projects, the Indian companies put together, is about 63 or 60 plus about 4.52 crores. Meru is about 83 crores and Endox is 149 crores. We went big.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir, and all the very best.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Ishit Seth with Anvil. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question and congrats on very good set of numbers. Sir, my question was with regards to, you know, the demand outlook. With what we've heard in the budget, especially for data centers, the tax incentives that government is providing, does this give a meaningful push for HVDC in the medium term for us? And the second question I had was, when we look at what we've highlighted in the presentation with regards to capacity expansion, possibly a greenfield facility for, you know, Meru at Turkey, what is the rationale of doing it outside of India and not in India, especially with the key management of Meru based out of New Delhi? So if you could explain both these points.
With regards to your first question on data center, I think anything if you are doing on data centers, the only cost of running a data center apart from people is energy. Some of the data centers in India that we are talking about hyperscale is already 1 GW. That is what Google said. We are also looking at some projects like Fermi in U.S., where they're talking about 11 GW in Texas. And with the tax breaks in India with cheaper renewable power, I believe we should also be in that scale in the next 4 or 5 years in India. So when you talk about 10 or 11 GW, this is like a city of Pune that needs to be fed to a data center 24/7. There's going to be a lot of high power equipment that's being built, not just HVDC. It can be instrument transformers, wave traps, transformers. It's just a power ecosystem. So whether or not HVDC, I don't know, but whether there will be a lot of AC transmission equipment, 100% yes. But do I see anything happening in the next 2 years? I don't think so, because there has to be still some commitments, like even the money is still not seen on the ground yet. But in the U.S., we see a lot of hyperscale data centers coming up. We are working on some few opportunities. We just executed a Microsoft hyperscale data center in Finland. So in Europe, we are working. In U.S., we are hunting for opportunities. In India, as and when it comes in, we will get into it. That is the first point. The second point is on Meru. So for Meru expansion, they had about 45% coming in, of which something is already reflected. We had to start expanding for land, and near the factory in Delhi, the land is not coming less than 25-30 crores an acre, and at about 10 acres that we require at least 300 crores only for the land, plus the building and the people. I don't think it's economical viable for that kind of a business. The only other option was to shift it 150 kilometers away from where they are, which means the management anyways would not be there 24/7. We had about 40 acres of land in Turkey, and we had a lot of cash sitting in our subsidiaries there, highly profitable subsidiary. And Turkey is also overnight to Germany, France on the road. We also have a support and service team there, and which also enables an easier FAT, that what we call as factory acceptance test for European customers. So we are exploring. The board has requested a market survey along with the details. We will be in Turkey with a delegation going around talking to the customers. Even the Turkish local market seems significant. The prices are almost 30-35% higher than the Indian market. So we are consolidating operations there, and it would be cheaper for us to put in new capacity there because the cost of land and a lot of money is already available. That's all. Instead of putting that kind of money in India.
Yeah, and what kind of greenfield facility, when we talk about, setting up, a greenfield facility, what kind of capacity we're looking at, for Meru?
The initial outlay for the test lab and other allied equipments, including manufacturing, is about $3-$3.5 million, plus the building. So we are working. I think the building would cost us about $2-$3 million. About $6 million is what we have an outlay. Since Meru does not have all the cash on its book, so we also have cash on Endox book, that and the land is there. We are using those opportunities. At, I think, about $6 million, I think in about 2 to 3 years' time, I believe it should be a $25-$35 million facility with similar margins of between 15% and 20%.
Understood. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Naman Parmar with Niveshaay Investments. Please go ahead.
Good morning, sir. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Firstly, continuing with the other participant question that increasing the capacity in the Turkey. So with the trade deal with the Europe and various U.S. and other countries, don't you think the manufacturing facility increasing in the India will be very viable for us? Because manufacturing India is always very less costly as compared to the other parts. Even though you have rightly pointed out about the cost of the land is very high in the mid. So any outlook on that?
So I will answer the question. So if you look at high voltage electrical equipment manufacturing, say a power transformer, which you are very well aware, Hitachi operates in excess of 11 factories across the world, and the biggest factory for them for HVDC packs is Brazil, not India or China. Same way, GE operates multiple facilities. So the customer here is not really worried about prices. It's not the lowest cost of manufacturing which decides the buy decision. It is also access to the factory, the FAT. So most European customers need a visa to enter India, whereas it's a domestic flight for them to fly inside EU. It's on road. The service teams can enter facilities within 3-4 hours from a direct flight from Istanbul and most parts of Western Europe. And the deliveries are about 6 weeks, 8 weeks inside the factory and another 2-3 days on road to most parts of Europe. India still is a mother facility. India would still have a lot of market for, say, something like the U.S., Australia, and more larger markets. But I think European is also far more inward-looking market toward Indian companies. A European base would not hurt. And we also don't have the land in Meru. So if I have to invest in a land 150 kilometers away and then ship it to Europe, I think this is much cheaper, easier, and the capital allocation is better because I have money sitting in one book, I have technology sitting in the other book, and the customer is very close to where I am.
Understood. Understood. Secondly, on the capacity and revenue potential side, so existing capacity could handle around 1,500 crore of revenue, right? With the all-new capacity that you are expected to come in the quality, Meru, Indore, Sukrut, and all, how much revenue potential could be for you?
I would take it stepwise, my dear friend. Instead of going and throwing some large numbers, I would go sequentially. A healthy growth every year is what I would want the company. I believe we will be taking an S-shaped curve, grow exponentially 1 year, stabilize the next, again grow. That would also help us build the teams internally, build the structures because not every year you can recruit 400-500 people and then take another 500-800 people next year. So we also need to internally stabilize for the next step of growth. So that's going to be the ecosystem. While all this is happening, we are also generating a lot of cash. I think our net current assets is in close to 390+ crores. And what we say, we would also attempt some acquisition in the near future if we find something attractive in our space. I think largely it's both organic and inorganic. That's where our growth potential is.
Okay. And lastly, on the other income side, so if we see on the current quarter, your other income has fell significantly. So how much cash do you currently hold in the Turkey plant? There was a very big translation gain used to happen in the earlier quarter, right, due to hyperinflation in Turkey. So currently, what is the scenario for the end of the other income?
So the Turkish lira has been more or less stable for the last 3 months-4 months, which is translating to zero forex gain or loss in your hedge call. So it is going into operating income. So the other income is slowly translating into operating income. More or less, the EBITDA remains the same in percentages if you compare in the last three quarters.
Okay. Yeah. Understood. Yeah. And lastly, if you can give an order book breakup for all the three: quality, Indore, Meru, and Sukrut.
So quality, I think, is about between 290 crores-300 crores. Sukrut is about 4-5 crores. With Meru, I think, is excess of 400 crores. Indore, because they build a very high quarter, is about 150-160 crores. Of the new order intake that is likely to come in, about 200+ crores for quality power, about 70-90 crores for Meru, and sorry, for Indore, and another about 100+ crores of Meru. That's what we are seeing immediately in the next 45 days that we should be able to sign.
Okay. Understood. And for Meru, the margin that you have expanded in the current quarter of around 16%, so you expect that the margin could increase more from here also, or it could be sustainable for the Meru?
I think we would like to chase growth right now because Meru is a growth engine for us globally. So we are comfortable with the guidance what we gave. We are comfortable with the margins what we have. So even with Meru being lower, our overall margins are still under control. We would focus growth from Meru at this moment rather than margin expansion.
Okay, yeah. Understood, yeah. Thank you so much for answering.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Srinik Mehta with Indo Alps Wealth. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Just wanted to check a little bit of an idea about all the expansions that you're doing. So if you just take the current expansion and if you just take, say, 75% capacity utilization, what could be the revenue that we could generate just based on current expansions?
I believe it would be safer to say about close to 1,500 crores.
Okay. And my second question was more about these trade deals that have been signed. So there is also an inclusion of supply to Turkey that comes with the European deal. How do you see this impacting maybe from 2027 onwards?
So the customers for our products have an elastic budget. So it's basically bought on brand and technology rather than what the prices are. So as long as your factory is compliant, the technology is good, you have capacities, I think the tariffs really didn't matter. I don't think tariffs either impact us positively or negatively. So I don't have any good news on that front. However, what I've seen in the last couple of days that it has a feel-good effect on the customer. He feels he saved something small. That small is big for them. So I believe that's only a feel-good sentiment rather than really impacting the business sentiment. These are not commodities. These are high-end technical stuff. So where the customer knows what he's buying, the price is not something that is going to hinder what if he decides what to buy. Just to give you an idea, say an F-35 Sukhoi or a Rafale, I don't think it is on what is the price of F-35 or Sukhoi. The customer has made his decision what he wanted to buy, and then based on what he is to buy, he negotiates with the vendor. That's how it goes in the sector.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Shashank Jha with SB Capital. Please go ahead.
My question is regarding a top line. Like with the current capacity and the capacity coming, you can add less to 2,500 crore of revenue. As per your guidance shared in last call. So any plan on having new capex and what is the timeline you can give to achieve that revenue?
So Sushant, we did not guide anything to 2,500 crores. We just said that this factory can go up to 1,500 crores. Our focus is to first deliver on this factory, focus on Meru expansion, and focus on getting more throughput out of Endox, increasing at least three times from Sukrut. I think we have a lot in our table for the next 12 to 24 months. I believe that is going to keep us busy. We have land bank, we have cash. I think as and when there is a requirement of a capex, I don't think there is a problem. If the board approves and we feel it required as promoters, we would put in. I think next 24 months, I don't think we are even looking at that.
So this 100% growth, is it sustainable using the capacity we are having currently and I'm going to have it sometime? Because I don't feel like I see it sustainable for at least 2-3 quarters.
So I guided earlier that we would be having an S-shaped curve. So the next year, once we get the new factory coming in, we will have audits going in. And once the audits and the teams are fixed, I think you will see some hyper growth again after about 12 months time. Meru, again, they are incremental capacity. If the board approves the Turkish facility, again, it will be about 7, 8, 10 months of capex, and then they would again start spiking. So I think these would be coming as bullet quarters. And again, as I said, it's both inorganic and organic. So where we target organic, we may also surprise markets with inorganic stuff.
Okay, great. Sir, two more numbers I need from you. One is the sustainable EBITDA margin, what can be? And second is tax rate. Like your tax rate is varying a lot, quarter on quarter. So can you give me some number, what will be the tax around FY28? I assume it will be something like 25, but I just want to get some confirmation from you. And secondly, some numbers on EBITDA margin, which can be sustainable.
We have already guided that 20% is your flow rate for the EBITDA margin for all your calculation analysis. I think we would have a positive bias on 20%. That is point one. And the second question was, you asked me, was on.
Tax rate.
Tax rate. So in India, the tax rate for both Mehru and Quality Power is about 25%. At Sucrute, they have about 25 crore of losses that we will be able to recoup going forward from the old management. With regards to Endox, we have a lot of R&D benefits in that country. So it's effectively zero tax rate as and when we do the project. So we have paid close to zero tax rates over the past 15, 16 years that we have owned there. I believe that will continue till they change the policies in that country. That's one of the reasons why the effective tax rate looks lower, but it is because Endox pays anywhere between 0% and 4% taxes.
So, sir, for my calculations, what can I assume? So 20%, 22%, what would this be?
About tax rate, you can take it about 20%, assuming that even if you don't do any R&D in Turkey and there's only small R&D, you still would get it. But if you look at our DRHP as of last year, I think the numbers was between 5% and 6% of our revenue is what we were doing as an R&D budget. Again, they are doing the battery energy storage, STATCOMs, SVCs, high-end of the stuff. So that kind of money needs to be continuously deployed to get advantage on the technology side.
Okay, great. Got it. Thank you. All the best.
Thank you. Thank you, Shashank.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Yash Dantewadia with Dante Equity Capital. Please go ahead. Mr. Yash, your line has been unmuted. Please go ahead with your question.
Yeah, am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah, actually, just missed one number. I had a choppy line. Could you just reiterate the order flow for the next 6-9 months?
I don't know about 6-9 months. Right now, we have about 890+ crore of an order book and about 300+ crore that we would likely to sign in the next few weeks. That is stuff that we know. Otherwise, the pipeline is very healthy. As and when we get it, we will declare to the markets. So right now, we are covering more than 1 year of order book.
Perfect. Just wanted to understand. This quarter, I think, is the first time you've achieved the 300 crore run rate, almost the top line. From what I was able to understand and your guide, when I went through your guidances before, you've been pretty conservative in giving guidances, and you've overachieved generally. So going forward, do you think the current run rate is manageable, assuming you have, let's say, a 3-4 quarter of order book already in? That's my first question. Second, your order execution and deliveries obviously sometimes are a little choppy, right, and lumpy in nature because you might build in, have one quarter of very high deliveries. So was this quarter one of those quarters, or is this quarter lumpy or not lumpy or sustainable or not sustainable? I hope you got the question.
So on the first question, I had already replied to Shashank that we plan to get an S-shaped curve, grow 1 year, then have a healthy growth the next year, and then again start spiking in the next 2-3 years when the super cycle of the business is going around. That is point one. With regards to lumpy quarters, yes, we will have lumpy quarters because if you're doing a lot of American business or Turkish business, December happens to be lumpy. If you're doing a European business, September happens to be lumpy. But more or less, the guidance was between 700 and 800 crores. I think when you look at the guidance and what the numbers we delivered, I think more or less these are factored in. So that is where it is. So there is nothing new apart from the guidance that we have already given.
Right, but just trying to get this right.
We are a very newly listed company. We cannot overcommit, underdeliver. So I think going forward, we would like the way Voltam, our peer, the transformer guys communicated. We listen to the calls. We do our own peer review. We would like to excite the market every time rather than disappoint.
No, that's perfect. Also, when we take orders in, let's say the 900 crore order book, do we use anything to hedge the commodity sort of input, or do we place our orders immediately? How does that work?
Unfortunately, both of us is not possible for us because we really don't know when the customer is going to lift or when the project is online. But then we know what the deliveries are. The prices of the copper or aluminum is normally factored in as a part of that process. Sometimes you miss it, like in a super cycle, like last week where the copper prices went haywire. That quarter we may have an impact, but the same quarter we are also booking orders at that price. And the next quarter, the price is not sustainable. It goes down, so you book the profit the next quarter. So unfortunately, we cannot. If we get a clearance, we need to go ahead with the copper because we have to buy every day the metals. You cannot have your factory running empty because the copper prices are higher. So that's a part and parcel of the deal, but our margins allow us to take care of it. And we've been there in the business for more than 2.5 decades. I think we know how to manage these cycles. But yeah, the super cycle of 30% in 1 week or something, it sometimes hurts immediately, but over a period of a year, it flats out.
But how many months of inventory do we generally maintain? You said we buy every day. Could you just help me understand at any given point of time how many covered and factored in?
So we normally don't buy every what we say the long lead. Sorry, we don't buy the what we say material and stock. It is mostly just in time based on order-based performance. But something like insulator, some long lead cables where we see suddenly a huge spike in deliveries, we are right now storing it, like stocking it from global sources, Indian sources, whatever capacity we have, because that determines our sales in the next 2 quarters. So that's one of the reasons why we are stocking, and the stock is related to only the most problematic items and not the ones which are not required. So these are temporary measures that is taken to based on market situation. Otherwise, in a normal market, I don't think we have an inventory of more than 2-3% of our revenue.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Yash, I would request you to please come back in the queue for further questions. The next question comes from the line of Praful Agarwal with IIFL Cap Finance. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Good morning, all. My question is, hello.
Yes, sir. You're audible. Please go ahead with your question.
My question is, what is the current capacity utilization, and by when do you expect the recent CapEx to start meaningful contributing to our revenue and ROCE?
So our capacities are already stretched more than 100% at the current moment. All the businesses, Mehru, Quality Power, at the manufacturing stage. Sukrut has a lot to offer. Endox, we can take more. With regards to the capacity of Mehru, I think you would see some incremental numbers coming in from second quarter next year. For us to start seeing some significance of the CapEx, we need to complete a lot of audits. We need to also have the HVDC plant, the cable factory online. You would see some numbers trickling in from the third and fourth quarter of next year. You will see the uptick coming in. You would obviously see the order book shooting up every quarter, which would eventually be translated into numbers in the next few quarters. As I said, with the current order book, we are already at about close to 300 booked, another 200, 250 coming in the next few weeks. This is about against 167 crores of last March. So we are already 3x, and we could take more provided we have capacity to deliver.
Okay.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this will be our last question. It's from the line of Dev Bilwani with Care PMS. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. So if I look at Endox quarter and quarter growth, it is approximately 100%. And then last month call, you mentioned that new capacity expansion will commission in December 2025. So new capacity won't have contributed much. Plus, existing facility was also at 100% utilization. So what is the reason behind such high growth in Endox?
Endox, you are confusing with what we are doing, and these are all different product lines. We are not one product, one location, company. Each factory, each location has a different product line and a different vertical. The capacity shortage has been in our manufacturing verticals in India, in Turkey, where we are doing the power electronics portion. We never had a problem with capacity. We had other issues on semiconductors earlier. Now it's again high voltage components. December is a year-end for them, and this is where a lot of large projects execute, like March for most of us. I think that is the story, and this is not something new. We had already factored in the growth, and that's where the guidance came in. So when we did about 360-370 crores last year, and we had guided to 800+ crores based on the numbers that we had 12 months before. This is not unplanned.
Okay, and last question, what will be the peak revenue from Meru and Endox after capacity expansion?
Depends on copper prices, my dear friend. If the copper keeps going, I don't need to do anything. The prices increase 30%. So it's very difficult to answer such questions, but I would say that 45% of thing about 450-500 crores Meru can go in at this current moment at the current CapEx. Going forward with what we do in Turkey and other parts of the world, I think we will come over the next call.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraint, that was the last question for today. With that, we conclude today's conference call. On behalf of Asit C. Mehta, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.